This is an iHeart podcast.
Whatever team Fia is on has a chance to win a championship.
I'm Christina Williams, host of the podcast, In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams. The WNBA playoffs are here, and I've got the inside scoop on everything from key matchups and standout players to the behind-the-scenes moments you won't find anywhere else.
It's really, really hard to be the champions, but we have to remember how it feels and embrace the new challenge that we have.
So listen to In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams, an iHeart Women's Sports production in partnership with Deep Blue Sports and Entertainment on iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You want smart political talk without the meltdowns? We got you.
And I'm Carol Markowitz.
And I'm Mary Catherine Hamm. We've been around the block in media, and we're doing things differently.
Normally is about real conversations, thoughtful, try to be funny, grounded, and no panic.
We'll keep you informed and entertained without ruining your day.
Join us every Tuesday and Thursday.
Normally, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Your holster is way more important than you think it is. It's just way more important than you think it is. What? Look, and I get that. The holster's not the sexy part of carrying firearms, right? You want to talk about your weapon and your ammunition. You want to talk about your safety training. You want to talk about how you did at the range. Oh, look at my groups. I was doing these failure drills today. And all that stuff's really important. I mean, really, really important. I'm not discounting that. But I've known so many people who do all those things. They take all the necessary steps, and then they carry with a holster they bought from a big box hunting store that was made 1,000 at a time. Please, don't put your life in one of those holsters. You need to trust Northwest Retention Systems because it's all custom-made gear. It's the only thing I carry around. NWRetention.com. That's NWRetention.com. Use the promo code Jesse. Get you 10% off.
This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
Oh boy, it's time to have a day about divorce, national divorce. You guys know that's my thing. I'm all about that. Let's just separate. Let's do the hard work now. Won't be pleasant, won't be enjoyable. Let's get it over with now. Not that I'm happy about it, but every single person knows where this is going if we don't. We're going to have one of our best guests, Dave Reboy, on today to discuss that specifically. Go over some of your questions on it. And you can email me those questions, jesse@jessekellyshow.com. jesse@jessekellyshow.com. Speaking of national divorces, breakups, I've always found Alexander the Great's situation to be a really, really fascinating one because it was so vicious and ugly and backstabbing and amazing that I like it. Here was his situation. First of all, let's get to his father. No, everyone talks about Alexander the Great. I mean, universally, even with our government-educated society, pretty much everyone out there knows the name Alexander the Great. Right, Chris? Everybody knows that name. Everybody. Chris, what was his father's name? Has no idea. Nobody knows the poor freaking dad's name. Alexander the Great's father was the man who built all of it. I'm not saying Alexander the Great was anything less than amazing. He was amazing. Never lost a battle. Incredible. Tactically, meaning on the battlefield, the dude was a legend. Alexander the Great's father built the sports car from scratch with his own two hands, fuels it up, and then dies with Alexander holding the keys. Now, he had to get in and drive it. King Philip II of Macedon was a beast. I guess the dude had one eye, made him horrifying looking. He slapped around all the other Greeks. He came up with longer pikes, longer spears for his army. He built the Macedonian army, or Macedonian army, depending on how you say it. I say Macedonian, into this absolute military juggernaut. And then he dies. And there are a million theories about how he died, or who, I should say, killed him, because we know he was assassinated. Somebody slammed a knife in between his ribs. So that's how he died. But when they chased down the assassin, they killed him right away. You know, that's not really what you do, even in the ancient world. You chase down the assassin and you get your hands on him and then you pull his fingernails out until you find out why he did what he did. Who paid him to do what he did. They chased this one down, dead. Oh, did we forget to interrogate him? Man, whoops. Our bad. But that's another story. Alexander the Great takes over. He eyes up Persia. At this point in time, remember, this is the Achaemenid Persian Empire, one of the largest, greatest empires in the history of the world, and they're really kind of at their peak right now, and Alexander says, oh no, they're going down. He takes a much, much smaller army, storms into that area, and throttles them in every possible way, winning battles where he's outnumbered 2-1 and winning decisively. We are not here to put Alexander down. Let's keep in mind the dude was personally absurdly brave. This could very well be because he was raised to think he was practically a god, descended from Hercules. He would ride at the head of his formation into battle and just start killing people. Alexander the Great had pelts on his wall, lots of them. I always love the story of Alexander the Great being buried in Egypt. This is obviously a long time after. And the Roman legend Caesar Augustus coming down to visit that area and asking to see Alexander the Great's tomb just to pay his respects. The people there asked him if he wanted to see any of the other people buried there, you know, all the other famous people, the Ptolemies and things like that. And he said, I came to see a king, not a bunch of corpses. When the Romans revere you like that, that's something. But again, this is not about Alexander. Alexander the Great finishes things off, kind of stalls out over there in the east, India, Afghanistan. It's not that he wasn't winning. It's that his guys at this point in time were looking around as in, wow, we really conquered the known world. We're now dying of dysentery in the jungles of India. Why are we here? He kind of loses support for the campaign, stops it all, conquers the known world, promptly dies at 32 or 33. And nobody knows why or how. Poison, an STD, some jungle disease. Nobody knows, but he dies. Now, this is a situation that could be slightly applicable in a roundabout way to maybe our situation. Here you are, and you have, at this moment, the largest, wealthiest empire in the history of the world. This is around 300 BC. What do you do? Alexander the Great famously did not name a successor. What do you do? And here's Alexander the Great's, one of his great things you can say about him turned into one of the worst things. Alexander the Great had some outstanding generals and leaders all around him. They were extremely close personally. Rumors abound to this day that they were very close personally, again, this is ancient Greece. Anything goes, baby. But be that as it may, you have a bunch of very, very, very capable men who've been fighting with you. And now it's that awkward moment where Alexander the Great was seated at the head of the table. And all of a sudden, he falls over and dies. And you're all looking at each other. And you're looking at that empty chair. And you're looking at each other. And you're looking at that empty chair. And, I mean, who should have the chair? I want the chair. You don't want the chair, do you? No, I don't. But, I mean, I kind of do. I deserve it. I mean, do you want the chair? You shouldn't really want the chair. You know how this goes, right? Wealthy, powerful men. And wealthy, powerful men, as in having armies, powerful ones standing behind them. It's one thing to be a general and want to sit in that chair. It's another thing to be a general, want to sit in that chair and have 20, 30, 40, 50,000 armed men behind you saying, our general gets to sit in that chair. Only thing is, their general wants to sit in that chair, and he has the same thing, and their general sits in that chair, and he has the same thing, and their general sits in that chair. And this period of time, we will talk about it 100 times on the show, because there are a million and one little mini battles and mini things we can go over that are endlessly fascinating. But we're going to focus on one particular break off of this and one aspect of warfare I find fascinating. Hang on.
Truth. Attitude. Jesse Kelly.
HomeTitleLock.com. Please go there right now. And at least while you're there, just go there and register your address, because there's a chance you're already a victim of home title theft and you don't even know it. You see, your home title is not a piece of paper anymore. It exists online. And these criminals all over the place online who know what they're doing can get their hands on your home title and get an extremely real looking signature of yours on it. Take it to a lending institution, take out a loan against your title, they ride off with the cash, you have to pay that back. This is a serious crime sweeping the nation. Go to HomeTitleLock.com, use the code Jesse while you're there, get 30 free days of protection. HomeTitleLock.com, promo code Jesse.
This is the Jesse Kelly Show. Like a stain on your brain you can't get out.
Alexander, it was backstabbing, assassination, war after war after war after. I mean, it was ugly. And one man, one of the men who emerged, there were several. The Ptolemies emerged down in Egypt. Ptolemy Empire lasted a long time. But one of the guys who emerged was Seleucus the First. And I've told you this before when it comes to history, especially history this old. It's amazing to me the different stories you can get presented to you from different sources and presented to you as a fact. And I say this to you because I know there's a very good chance you geek out, or at least you're vaguely interested in history if you listen to my political slash history show. I want to caution you very much on something. I'm not some historian, dude. I'm not some academic. I'm going to say stuff that turns out to be factually incorrect. I'm sure I have at some point in time on the show. But you need to be careful. Reading something or listening to something and carrying it away as a fact, because you can end up making yourself look stupid. And this is what I mean when it comes to this today. Seleucus. He's obviously the man they named the Seleucid Empire for. He started it. This is what the first place I read about Seleucus, this is what they said, and this was not presented as opinion. This was presented as this is who he was. Seleucus was one of the right-hand men of Alexander, and he was the head of Alexander's companion cavalry. Well, that's a major deal. The companion cavalry were a big, big deal. Then I read one that said he hardly knew Alexander at all, and he was just kind of a page and ended up coming up at the end. And that was also presented as, well, this is just the facts on the ground. Which one of those is true? I have no idea. None. I kept reading, kept listening to different things. I have no idea where Seleucus the First came from. We do know, because they all overlapped in this, he was in command on some level by the end of Alexander's reign, in command of something, or at least a high up officer in something. What he commanded, how high up he was, who knows? Nobody knows. He moves from that and begins to try to make his way through this ugly, ugly world of this general demanding allegiance and this general demanding allegiance and this guy appointing you here. They end up making Seleucus, a satrap, essentially a governor of Babylon. Remember Babylon? The greatest city maybe of all time. Also, you want to believe the biblical version, which, let's be honest, I always agree with the biblical version because I'm not going to die by disagreeing with God. One of the most evil places of all time. The most evil place of all time. Chris, I forget exactly how it was laid out in the Old Testament. Even you people believe that. But Babylon was probably not a lovely, lovely place you'd want to raise the kids. Nevertheless, an architectural marvel. Fun, quick side note. I have actually stood on the ground where Babylon used to stand. Granted, when I stood there, it was an absolute wreck of a couple pieces of stone. This is in Iraq. But still, it was kind of cool. And people asked me after, well, did you take pictures? And I tried to explain, there's nothing really to take pictures of, per se. It's gone. All right, it's gone. And remember, this is after Babylon had been rebuilt. The great Assyrian king went down and flooded the place and tore the buildings down. They rebuilt it. Anyway, I don't want to get sidetracked on Babylon, Chris. Seleucus makes it out of that and starts this gigantic empire. And I mean, this thing is stretching from Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria, clear over to the Mediterranean. This thing is humongous. And this brings me to what I wanted to talk about today. Because I'm fast-forwarding clear through the Seleucid Empire to the end of the Seleucid Empire, because the end of it was a big battle called the Battle of Magnesia. Now, Seleucus the First is long dead by the time we get to the Battle of Magnesia, but in the Battle of Magnesia, the Seleucid Empire is taking on the Roman Empire. Now, why are they taking on the Roman Empire? I didn't mention the Roman Empire earlier, but what was happening over there? Well, remember, the Roman Empire was beginning, while Alexander the Great's empire was breaking up, while it was working itself out, Rome was beginning to rise a little, and that's being really generous. Rome was just a place for a while. And then they started to grow, and then they started to grow, and then they started to grow. And while all these people over in Alexander's empire, think Greece, even though we're talking about Macedonia and Greece, but think Greece just to make it easier, and everything to the east. While they're squabbling and breaking up and fighting and knifing each other over the bat and in the back and having war after war after war after war. I mean, it's endless. It is endless. We will do, like I said, we will do 100 shows on the mini battles and things like that in it. While they're doing that, there's somebody right there to the west, rising and rising and rising. And finally, Rome is this juggernaut. And still to the east, they're squabbling and fighting, and they don't seem to realize there's this juggernaut right there to the west. And Rome isn't focusing on the east. Why aren't they focusing on the east? Because they're fighting this place called Carthage. You already know that story because we've talked about it several times. They fight the First Punic War, and then they fight the Second Punic War. And what happens at the end of the Second Punic War? Hannibal pretty much gets the heave-ho. Hannibal's done. Hannibal meets Scipio on the battlefield. They have this long talk, then promptly loses to Scipio, and one of, if not the greatest general who ever lived, is kind of gone, right? Only this is the thing. He's not gone. Because now these Greeks in the east, after the Second Punic War, are very aware of the problem they have, a problem they didn't realize they were going to have. Remember, Rome, when Rome was fighting Carthage, was Carthage's equal, not superior. Carthage was a mega giant. Well, when one mega giant takes down the other mega giant in the area, now you're looking around and now there's one mega, mega giant and he's starting to look at you. And Rome, right about this time, looks around and realizes we are the most powerful force on the planet. Think what that's like for a country. Now, you're an American, so this will be a feeling that really it's all you've ever known. But think what it's like for a country throughout history when you have a moment, when you have an accomplishment, and you look around and you know for a fact, without a shadow of a doubt, I can take anything I want to take. I can take anything I want. I can make any rules I want. I can do whatever I want. That may sound really awesome, and it is kind of cool. Probably unhealthy, though, in the end. Hang on.
You're never completely ready to adopt a teen.
For late nights writing English papers.
For your teen's music taste.
For dinners, where they talk more on their phone than with you.
For the first time, they call you mom.
You're never completely ready to adopt a teen, and you can't imagine the reward.
To learn more about adopting a teen, visit AdoptUSKids.org.
Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
Part-time job, full-time hustle, all-time Shiro to all of us. You nurture, we listen. You teach, we thrive. You lift our spirits, but we've got to lay down the truth. It's time for you, our Shiro, to stretch for the stars. Start saving more for retirement now so you can feel prepared and live your life to the fullest. Get free tips to help boost your retirement savings now at aceyourretirement.org/Shiro.
A message brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Wars. Punic Wars are pretty much over. But Hannibal's still alive. Rome, the massive superpower, now sets its eyes on the east in places like the Seleucid Empire and says to themselves, well, I mean, it's there. And we're not going to act like the Romans are just the power-hungry, greedy people here. The Seleucid Empire looks at itself and says, well, We're no slouch here. I think that territory you want, that's what I want. And war it is. Now, this is the part of the show, it's a little different show, I want to focus on today. I have always and will always find it endlessly fascinating the use of animals in ancient warfare. I know it's sick. I know it would be ugly. I know I'd probably turn away at some point in time. But I want to see it. I want to know the techniques. I want to hear it. I'm dying to know how this looked, how it operated. Like the war dogs. The war dogs, well, one, the Romans used them. But two, more specifically, the ones Cortez brought over to conquer the Aztecs and others, had these gigantic armored war dogs that would eat people on the battlefield. I guess the Aztecs were scared to death of them, as you can imagine. What does that look like? What is the technique if you're an Aztec warrior trying to fight off a war dog? What is that? Right? Horses. We don't think about this much because all we see in the movies, some horses, you know, you saw in Braveheart, some horses riding into some spikes and people ride horses around and horses here and horses there. But like in this Battle of Magnesia, at one point in time, the Seleucids are vastly outnumbering the Romans, I should say. 70, 80,000 Seleucids, maybe 40, 50,000 Romans. But this is virtually the end of the Seleucid Empire because they get their butts whipped. And at one point in time, the Roman cavalry breaks through the Seleucid lines on the flank, goes by them, and then turns around and rides as hard as they can, and they smash into the back of an infantry formation that was facing the other way. Now, you and I have heard things like that before, but again, to get down to the specifics of it, when's the last time you were next to, maybe even rode or touched a horse? Horses are huge, and they're all muscle, and they weigh a lot, and they have hooves that can take your freaking head off. What does it look like if you are already in the heat of battle, your adrenaline pumping, you have armor on your chest, probably armor on your shins, you have a shield, you have a helmet, you have a spear, maybe a little sword on your side somewhere, and a 1,000-pound horse or five comes slamming into the back of you? Do you just die right away? I'm serious. Do they just run you right over and stomp you into the ground? What does it look like even if you're facing them? Horses can be, and I mean, I've rode plenty of them, a little intimidating just standing beside them. They can be because they're so big and so powerful. What if one's riding right at you with armor on it, or at least an armored person on top of it, and you have a spear? What? What goes through your head? What's the technique there? And lastly, as we get towards the end of it here, at this Battle of Magnesia, they had infantry, each side had infantry, each side had cavalry, but the Seleucids were such a vast, diverse empire. You know how wide and far it stretched. They also had chariots. How's that look, by the way? You and I would think a chariot would be a huge advantage, and I'm sure it was. Many people used it for a long time. You could picture a chariot. Probably put some spikes on the wheels. Somebody, probably two people in the chariot so someone can fire a bow and arrow from it. But how does the tire situation work? Have you ever thought about that? It's not sexy to think about, is it? But think about your car today on a bumpy road. Now, how about one without rubber on the tires? Some old wooden wheel. Even if there's some kind of shock-absorbing system, we can all agree it's most definitely not the shocks on your car now, right? Chris, am I crazy? I think about this stuff. You're fighting on a battlefield. You're not fighting on a green tennis court at Wimbledon. You're in the fields somewhere with cracks, crevices, holes, dead bodies you're riding over. How do you even stay in the chariot? Ever think about that? How do you make sure the chariot's wheels don't just fall right off after too much of a pounding? I'm not just making this up. Supposedly, they used to be really worried about it. Some of these people who use chariots would go to the battlefield days ahead of time and clear the battlefields out, trying to make sure, let's make sure all our chariots don't break down like a Hyundai in the middle of the thing. Sorry, Hyundai, I didn't mean to be insulting. I actually heard they're really nice now. Are they nice now, Chris? Who knows? Who cares? I'm not buying one. Which brings me to elephants. This is the part I would like to see a lot of ancient politics and ancient warfare. This may be at the top of my list. An elephant would have been trained. These war elephants they used, the Seleucids had them, the Romans did not. There was a couple instances later on of Romans using them. We're not going into that. The Seleucids at this battle, the Battle of Magnesia, had elephants. They put them at this battle in between the infantry formations. The elephants are huge, obviously. They are armored. They have three or four men sitting on top of them with bows and arrows. And this part fascinates me. They had a spike built in on top of the elephant's head. And the main driver, the guy piloting the elephant, had a huge hammer. At any moment, he could hammer that spike and it would drive down into the elephant's brain and kill it instantly. Why did they have this thing? Because elephants are huge, horrifying, intelligent, and skittish, unpredictable. We all want to see war elephants. I want to see war elephants, how they're used, but they were only used to limited success. Because once the other side figures out how to hurt them and or terrify them, they turn around and stomp through your guys as they lose their mind and you have to murder the elephant to keep them from stomping your guys to death. What does that look like if you're sitting there and you're thrilled? Oh, sweet, we got the war elephants. These Romans are in trouble now. And they take off in front of you, and at one point, you see them turn wild-eyed, making that loud elephant noise, and come pounding towards you with dust and everything else around. Tell me what's going through your mind at that moment when the elephant bears down. Hang on.
Jesse Kelly Show, on air and online at jessekellyshow.com.
We know for a fact, not a guess, we know for a fact the stock market at some point in time is going to have what they call a correction, which is a lovely way to put you getting financially destroyed. That's what it is. Stock markets do not only grow, as we've seen time and time again. So would you please explain to me why you have all your money that you've worked hard for in an IRA or 401k that's stocks and bonds? You know there's a precious metals IRA out there, right? You can get a free 20-page kit on legally moving your money to a precious metals IRA if you go to birchgold.com/Jesse. Get some precious metals in your portfolio. If not, make them your whole portfolio. Birchgold.com/Jesse. BIRCHgold.com/Jesse. I want to see a war elephant in action against somebody with some spears. What, Chris? You don't want to see it? I do want to see it. I know it's sick. I want to see it. I want to hear it. Again, the elephants lost their effectiveness, though, because people figured out to slash at the hamstrings, to spread out their formations. And the Romans, this might be my favorite thing ever. Before we wrap this thing up here, the Romans figured out you can take pigs, cover them in flammable grease, point them towards the elephants, and light them on fire. The pig then runs at a full sprint towards the elephant. You can imagine the sound a pig would be making as it's on fire. Probably smelled amazing. What, Chris? What? Imagine the sound a pig is making as it charges at the elephant on fire. The elephant now has this squealing ball of flame running at its feet, and the elephants would turn in a panic and take off. Isn't that amazing? But let's wrap this up. Battle of Magnesia, 70, 80,000 Seleucids on one side, had infantry chariots, elephants the works. Cavalry on the front, on the flanks. Romans had their standard sweet legionnaires and cavalry on the flanks. The Seleucids charge first with their cavalry, actually blow through a lot of the Roman cavalry on their flank when they get to them. And once they get through, they make one of the biggest mistakes in the history of warfare. Instead of turning around and running their cavalry into the back of the Romans, they keep going. Why did they keep going? Well, they were heading towards the Roman camp. Your camp, remember, is your supply line. It's everything you care about. It's your home. It's everything else. But the Seleucids made a horrendous mistake because, remember, the Romans didn't have camps. The Romans had many forts. This thing was not sitting back there with one or two camp servants. This thing was back there with a bunch of Roman troops they left in reserve and walls and artillery pieces, at least ancient version of artillery pieces. The Seleucids get beaten back. The Romans finish them off on the battlefield, and the Seleucid Empire, for all intents and purposes, is over. This wasn't really about the Battle of Magnesia or elephants or dogs or burning pigs. This is about the fact that I don't take the breaking up of a nation lightly. I don't. Yeah, we're going to have some fun with it. We're going to be tongue-in-cheek about it. But I am dead, 100% dead nuts serious that we should do this if humanly possible, because I see this nation fracturing irreparably. And let me clarify. A nation is only a nation for the same reason a tribe is only a tribe. A group of people decide, for whatever reason, they can exist around each other because they have a certain set of common values that overlap. That doesn't mean you're all the same. Doesn't mean you look all the same. Doesn't mean you all worship the same. Doesn't mean you all do the same things. But you have to have, in order to have a nation, you have to have a certain set of values that overlap. You have to have common values. And if you don't, it's not the end of the world, but it also means you shouldn't be a nation anymore, because a nation becomes a nation for sanctuary, for safety. Well, if we're living together and we have absolutely nothing in common and we hate each other, then we're no longer living together. We are caged together in a gladiator match. What common values do we have now with these leftists? And I'm not just talking about the anarchists or Black Lives Matter people on the streets. We have United States Senator Tammy Duckworth on television talking about the removing statues of George freaking Washington. So let me ask again, what are our common values? I'm all ears. Tell me. Jesse@JesseKellyShow.com. Jesse@JesseKellyShow.com. I want to know. Hang on. These Raycon earbuds are slick, really, really slick. And I love how they sound. Obviously, people talk about the bass all the time, and I'm big on that. But I listen to mainly podcasts, and the clarity of the voices I get in my ear are fantastic. And this is a big, big part of it for me, because I spend so much time with headphones in when I'm on the radio, and then I have an earpiece when I'm on TV. My ears need a break. These Raycon earbuds are easy on the ears. They don't feel like they're tearing out my ears, eardrums the entire time. I hardly know they're there. And you hardly know they're there, because they're not these gigantic, wired, gaudy-looking things. Cannot speak highly enough about them. I have the E25 earbuds. Highly recommend them. Half the prices of the other ones out there. Go to buyraycon.com/Jesse. That's buyraycon.com/Jesse. That gets you 15% off your order. If we don't share anything and we hate each other, why are we still doing this? For what? Nostalgia? Because we feel like we have to? Why do we have to? People get so defensive. Well, we can't do that. Why? I want to know why. Again, let me go back to this. Nations breaking up is not new. It's inevitable. It is the history of the world. Nations rise, nations fall. Nations break up, nations disappear. So, why are we doing this? Why don't we sit down like adults and just agree? Agree on what? Well, I'll explain.
Jesse Kelly Show.
You know, your house smells. Don't get mad. Don't get mad. My house smells too. I'm not indicting you. I'm sure you keep a clean home, but just time means you're going to acquire smells, whether those are cooking smells that get in your paint, your carpet. Maybe they're animal smells. Maybe you're a smoker or someone else was. Just living creates smells. I didn't realize that my home had a smell to it until I got my first Eden Pure Thunderstorm, the greatest air purifier I've ever owned in my life. This thing, I had it plugged in for 2 hours. I came back in the room and my air smelled so clean. I now own 3 of them. I'm not making that up. This thing has absolutely changed me on top of what it's done for my allergies. Go get one. Get 2. Be like me and get 3. Go to EdenPureDeals.com. Make sure you use the promo code Jesse. That gets you $10 off and free shipping. EdenPureDeals.com, promo code Jesse.
Whatever team Fee is on has a chance to win a championship.
I'm Christina Williams, host of the podcast, In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams. The WNBA playoffs are here, and I've got the inside scoop on everything from key matchups and standout players to the behind-the-scenes moments you won't find anywhere else.
It's really, really hard to be the champions, but we have to remember how it feels and embrace the new challenge that we have.
So listen to In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams, an iHeart Women's Sports production in partnership with Deep Blue Sports and Entertainment on iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You want smart political talk without the meltdowns? We got you.
And I'm Carol Markowitz.
And I'm Mary Catherine Hamm. We've been around the block in media, and we're doing things differently.
Normally is about real conversations, thoughtful, try to be funny, grounded, and no panic.
We'll keep you informed and entertained without ruining your day.
Join us every Tuesday and Thursday.
Normally, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is an iHeart Podcast.